Before we get started with this episode, I want to warn y'all that there's going to be things mentioned that might be disturbing or upsetting to some listeners, such as drug use, violence, murder, or suicide. If that's something you're not able to handle, then you may want to sit this episode out. Anyways, on with the episode. Man, I tell you what, kids these days, they think that socialism is the way to go. They think that all this socialism shit is Jesus and all that. Well, let me tell you something. You remember Jim Jones? He was a socialist, and look what he did. He done convinced like about 1,000 people to done go and suicide themselves for what? For his little capitalism hating socialism dreams? I don't think so. Wake up, America. Get owned, libs. Howdy, how's it going? I'm Eric Stewart, and you're listening to Landfill, a podcast where I spend some time info dumping about things that I find interesting enough to a point where I feel like I just have to talk about it. Thank you so much for giving me a listen. It really means a lot to me. I really hope you enjoy listening to me talk about information that's mostly interesting. It's mainly useless, but interesting no less. I think so, at least. I hope you do too. Of course you do. You're listening to this. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy. Just before the podcast gets started, I just want to wish everyone a quick little Happy New Year. And I hope that 2021 certainly goes better than the last year. I know that some of us need it more than others, but I hope that y'all are doing okay. Stay safe out there.
So some of you probably already know it already. Not everybody, but like a few people probably already know. But I recently had gotten myself a gaming PC. And whenever I got that, I started, you know, getting into all the normal shit that I was playing on the consoles. And one of those games was Far Cry 5. For those who don't know, Far Cry 5 is a game that takes place in Hope County, Montana, which has been overrun by a cult group, which I think they're just called like the Project at Eden's Gate or something like that. But they're this extreme group of like religious, it's this extreme like branch of Christianity from my understanding. And they've taken over the place and they got like armed guards and they're like kidnapping people in the name of giving them salvation, that type of shit. And I was like, you know what? This sounds strangely familiar. Kind of sounds like Jonestown. We should probably get on that episode. So this is me getting into that episode right now. So we really can't be getting into Jonestown without talking about the man who is behind it, which is, of course, most of you probably know Jim Jones, who was an American cult leader, preacher, and self-professed faith healer. Unsurprisingly, as you could probably guess, he didn't have a very happy childhood. His parents didn't have a very good relationship. Jim Jones Sr., his father, was often away working road crews, so the mom was very often alone. Coupled with the fact that his mom never actually wanted to be a mother, but then after Jim Jones Jr. was born, Sr. straight up just had a nervous breakdown and quit working, you know, to top it all off. This eventually led to them being evicted. They were later taken in by their family in Lynn, Indiana, which was a very conservative, orderly, and religious town, which unfortunately also had a very prominent KKK presence. The Joneses lived in a kind of rundown shack without even any plumbing. When Junior began school at the age of 6, Mom began a factory job. So, you know, they could actually get some proper, you know, good shit. Junior was an introverted child, so he often spent his free time reading. There was a lot of times where, you know, elderly widows would, they would kind of see him just kind of just waltzing about, looking kind of, you know, sad and shit. So they would just kind of invite him to their house to have cake, because, you know, they felt sympathy for him. And this was like the 50s or the 40s or some shit like that, and it wasn't weird. Because, you know, that was a different time. He was apparently such a polite young boy that he had quickly won them over, and he soon got his first exposure to religion by way of the Church of the Nazarene, by way of one of these elders. or met any of these elders. I don't remember. He was also apparently a very attentive churchgoer and would even go as far as reciting back words of the priests from sermons and scriptures back to the matriarchs. I don't know what it is about like these like psychopaths who have this strange obsession, but they also have an obsessive fascination with death, I should say. Not only that, but he was also strangely enraptured with Adolf Hitler as a child, to the point where when he was like trying to play with other children, he would often play as the Nazis, more specifically Hitler, and try to recruit the other children to be his stormtroopers. Eventually, his dad became an alcoholic, had a stroke, and then mom and dad divorced, which I think his dad died later on after the stroke. I don't remember. But they eventually moved to Richmond, Indiana. It was here that Jim Jones worked at Reed Memorial Hospital and graduated high school with honors. Jim eventually met Marceline Baldwin, married her, and moved to Indianapolis, which was the heart of KKK country. He also attended Butler University while Marceline found work as a nurse in Bloomington. During his time here, he discovered his passion for racial integration and socialism. In 1952, he accepted a position as a student pastor at Somerset Methodist Church, and soon discovered that the way to attract crowds was to adopt a flamboyant Pentecostal style and integrate faith healing into his performances. He straight up just said, it's a good idea to bring more people into the church. I'm going to slap them, and then that's going to heal them. And that's a good idea, and everyone's going to love me, and I'm not going to be a psychopath at all. Anyways, besides that weird little thing. Well, it's not as weird as, the other shit, but it's still kind of weird. At the same time that he was a student pastor at these churches, he also, this is a weird detail, but he, at the same time, had been selling live monkeys on the side, and that was how he was making a living? What the hell? that's kind of funny. Every time that I think about that, that's kind of funny. At each service, he insisted that the audiences be completely racially integrated and that the black attendees sit at the front. This, considering the times with, Indianapolis churches being strictly segregated and, the Jim Crow laws and all that shit. This, of course, didn't really sit well with his employers at the church. Jim would later quit the church in disgust and set up his own community unity church, which morphed into Wings of Deliverance and later be renamed to the People's Temple Full Gospel Church. After he founded the People's Temple, he threw himself into the civil rights movement for African Americans. He went as far as appearing on TV and radio shows, loudly proclaiming, "Let my people go." My people, of course, referring to African Americans. Other churches, restaurants, movie theaters, and amusement parks were fully integrated soon afterwards due to his efforts. He, of course, wasn't perfect, though. He had apparently told his black churchgoers that they'd be thrown into concentration camps by the government if they ever left the church. It was also rumored that he would beat members and force them to give up their belongings and even their children. He would often wear dark clothing and sunglasses just to step outside the church, even on rainy days. And it used to be that he'd wear them everywhere except for the church. In 1961, he was so overexhausted, he just collapsed. Not like from heart problems or some random shit like that. He was just so tired that he just fell over. But yeah, he just collapsed, and he was taken to a black hospital by mistake. Which, I mean, that detail is always goofy to me, because it's like, oh, well, he's fallen over. Let's just put him in a hospital. Which hospital? Any hospital. Oh, wait, this is a white dude going to a black hospital by mistake. Hey, he looks close enough. I understand, the integration shit and everything, but if there's a separate hospital for black people, than there is for white people. Then, like, how do you accidentally send a white dude to a black hospital? I don't know. I thought that was funny. After he was mistakenly taken to the black hospital, he refused to move when they, you know, realized, hey, he probably shouldn't have been taken to this hospital. He refused to be moved, and he even went as far as making the beds and emptying the pans, you know, the pans that the patients would pee and poop in. He would empty those pans for the other patients. And it was these efforts that directly led to pressure on the hospitals to be desegregated because of Jim Jones refusing to be moved because of mistake. Ain't that legendary? White-owned businesses and churches were unsurprisingly critical of Jones for his desegregation efforts. He received threats, a swastika was painted on the side of the People's Temple Church, and a dead cat was even tossed at Jim's house. During the 60s, the Joneses adopted three children of Korean descent, who he referred as his Rainbow Family, and he encouraged his followers to do the same with war-torn refugees. At some point, he became strangely obsessed with the prospect of a nuclear holocaust. He told his followers, at one point, of a prophetic dream he had of the entire American Midwest being annihilated by nuclear fire. He then took his family to one of, quote-unquote, nine places in the world to hide from atomic destruction, which was the name of a magazine that I guess he got this from. One of them was Belo Horizonte, Brazil, and he stayed there for 2 years. And during his time here, his hatred and distrust for the U.S. government intensified. They returned to Indianapolis and immediately planned to move the congregation to another hiding spot, which was in Redwood Valley, California, and they later that same year expanded into San Francisco. He was ordained in 1957 by the Independent Assemblies of God, and again in 1964 by the Disciples of Christ. Joe Moscone, who Jones helped become the mayor of San Francisco, was appointed as chairman of the San Francisco Housing Authority Commission. Soon the church began getting its first wave of controversy in California, such as articles that had profiled the church and had painted Jim Jones as a false messiah who claimed to bring 43 people back from the dead, and the authority structure was also put under the spotlight. Jim began to view the media outlets as the enemy and agents of the devil, and things only got worse after 8 members of the People's Temple had defected and had emerged with stories of financial abuse, mind control, and tax evasion. A response to all of this pressure was the first mentions of mass suicide by Jim Jones, which he claimed would turn the followers into martyrs to shame the people who were out to get all of them. So he's pretty much trying to, like, guilt shame them all, or guilt trip them all into, like, you know, stop bullying me, my church is legitimate, I'm Jim Jones, I'm gonna kill myself. Alright, Jim. In 1973, Jones decided to relocate the church to Georgetown, Guyana, which we would later come to know it as Jonestown. Why he picked this place, though, I can't say for sure, because as I was researching this more, apparently the soil in Georgetown was really bad for agriculture. I guess it wasn't fertile enough. And this was especially a problem considering that agriculture was like a main thing for Jonestown being founded here. It was like an agricultural mission or something like that. But besides that, Georgetown, Guyana was... Besides that, it's possible that Jones had picked this place purposely because it was isolated, having been located 7 miles away from the closest town. Construction of the communes in Jonestown began in 1974, and had become an established community later that same year. One of the ways he scared the people into staying was convincing them that the U.S. government was coming to kill all of them, and even going as far as having security fired into the woods at nothing to make it seem like they were under attack. Some arranged actors were sent running into the forest and would be shot with rubber bullets. He claimed that the society made the children independent and community-oriented. Children were often separated from their parents to be raised communally by other church members, and they were only allowed to see their biological parents at night. The thing to know, though, is that child abuse was actually pretty rampant before the mass suicide, and harsh punishments were dealt out to anyone who deviated as a means to keep his power on display, including the children. Not only were they beat, but also they were subjected to other very cruel punishments, one of which included the box, which was an underground 6x4 enclosure where people would be caged for several hours in sweltering heat and complete sensory deprivation. Another one was the well, which was more commonly used for children, but the people who were put in the well, nonetheless, were left to spend the night at the bottom. Some were even left to dangle upside down inside of the well. Children are actually used quite frequently as a means to blackmail the parents into staying, because of course, as a parent, you wouldn't leave your child behind. Some of the children at a certain point stopped feeling loyalty to their parents, which made it just that much harder to actually escape Jonestown with their children. Family members were often pitted against each other, with the children being encouraged to snitch on defecting adults. Both kids and adults would even go as far as calling Jones dad or father. Someone's got daddy issues. Both the kids and Jones, I guess. Some of the extracurricular activities in Jonestown included white knights. Not like white knights as in like the dudes who'd be all like, oh, stop bullying the women on the internet. Not those kinds of white knights. Like knights as in like day and night. when Jones declared a white knight, the community would basically roleplay a doomsday scenario where children and adults would all line up to receive some red wine that they would then drink to reenact a mass suicide scenario. But the thing is, people never actually knew, apparently, if it was rehearsal, if their wine was actually laced with cyanide. But these rehearsals were usually mainly used as loyalty tests to see if people were still going to be loyal to the People's Temple. Some of the children were bold enough to run away into the jungle, but you know, the rest still had to undergo all the bullshit that they were going through at Jonestown. But at least for most people, it wasn't very easy to leave Jonestown because Jones had confiscated everybody's passports, as well as there being armed guards patrolling the borders pretty much all the time. On Memorial Day 1977, Jones and 600 other followers made an appearance in San Francisco at a commemoration for suicides at the Golden Gate Bridge. How ironic. Jim Jones doing a commemoration for... Anyways. He was quoted as saying, "I have been in a suicidal mood myself today, so I have personal empathy for what we are doing here today." An article came out in August that same year that alleged that members were getting beaten, the church had tons of financial misdealings, and that Jones was nothing more than a charlatan. By this time, Jones and around 1,000 other followers were already in Guyana, with 50 more in the States. Meanwhile, Jones was hoping that the Soviet Union would take this community in for salvation. That seems like a little insignificant detail, but it's important for later. But anyways, back in California, there was a woman with whom Jones had a son that was living at the commune that was suing for custody of the child. But of course, he refused to give the child up. And after that happened, a declaration of human rights violations were issued by defectors and the media, which included rehearsals for mass suicide. A group of people called the Concerned Relatives, which, you know, were concerned relatives. I don't know why I had to explain it. Concerned relatives considered Jonestown to be little more than a concentration camp, with armed guards constantly patrolling and the people being subjected to sleep deprivation, forced labor, and brainwashing. It got so bad to a point where Congressman Leo Ryan of the Northern California area eventually took up an investigation into Jonestown and went there with several NBC reporters and some concerned relatives. The church members were apparently instructed to essentially portray Jonestown as this utopian society, down to being told what to say when they were spoken to by the congressman. One of the reporters with Ryan was secretly passed a note from a member in the crowd that revealed that he wanted to leave with the congressman, including several others that were recorded by the NBC reporters on the cameras. Ryan brought the issues up to Jones, who told him that members were free to come and go as they please. Ryan publicly declared after that anyone who wanted to leave with him could do so. About 14 people would come forward to leave with him. One of the temple members attacked the congressman with a knife at one point before they actually left. And almost immediately after the defectors and the congressman left, Jones ordered armed bodyguards to follow their trucks. Just before they boarded the plane, the guards opened fire on the group of people, and one of the quote-unquote defectors, I say quote-unquote because he was actually, you know, one of the followers disguised as a defector, but one of the defectors pulled out a handgun and began shooting at people who had already boarded. Ryan and four others were killed in this attack. The guards radioed Jones that the congressman was dead, and Jones immediately began talking to his followers over speakerphone, telling them that because of Ryan's death, the Soviet Union would most likely no longer take them in. The Americans were now certain to send armed forces, and further drove fear of American intervention into the followers, telling them that the armed forces would torture their children, rape their women, and brutalize their elders. He proposed that the only dignified solution was mass revolutionary suicide. And then on November 18th, 1978, 904 people took their own lives in what would be known as the Jonestown mass suicide. They were led to the main church building and were basically told, "We're starting a revolution." They were presented with a tub of Flavor-Aid, cyanide, potassium chloride, and several other toxic substances. Mothers were first in line, squirting syringes of the juice into the infants' mouths, believing that if their children were dead, then they'd of course have nothing else to live for, so they'd be more willing to, you know, do the bad. Naturally, some people expressed doubt and fear at the prospect of imminent death. But there was basically no escape at this point, though, because surrounding the group of children and their parents were armed guards to prevent escape, and they even walked around with stethoscopes and shot anyone who still had a heartbeat. After all this was done, all the guards later had killed themselves. And then Jones, it was discovered, had died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Many of the Jonestown survivors were people who could tell ahead of time that shit was getting bad, and others managed to just hide it out to escape the suicide, or, you know, straight up play dead. How they were able to get around, you know, the people going around shooting the bodies and shit, though, that I'm not sure about. But anyway, there is audio. Yes, there is audio of this shit. There's audio recording of the suicide from that day that you can listen to on YouTube right now. If you, like, search up Jonestown death tape or whatever, it'll pull that up. But fair warning, it may be disturbing to listen to if you're, you know, really sensitive to, like, shit like that. After all, you are listening to the sound of, like, 900 people die. On a higher note, though, I know it's kind of hard to do higher notes on an episode like this, but on a higher note, one of the survivors, Jackie Speer, who was one of Congressman Ryan's aides, would later go on to run for Congress to take a seat after his death, winning a spot a couple years later, and is currently a representative for California's 14th Congressional District as a Democrat. And she also has since written a book that mentions her struggles, including her time in Jonestown, called Undaunted.
Anyways, that was Jonestown. Thank you so much for listening if you've made it this far. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please do consider subscribing. I would love it so much from you. And be sure to tune in on the next episode. I've got one coming up here soon about Rasputin. You know, the Boney T song. Ra, ra, Rasputin. It's just going to be that song played over like a 20-minute period. No, I'm joking. It's not going to be that. It's just going to be about, you know, the dude Rasputin, you know, the inspiration for the song. But anyway, that'll be out probably next week. I'll talk to you then. Love you guys. Bye-bye.